The Sporland Division of Parker Hannifin Corporation is sponsoring this podcast. Sporland is the leading manufacturer of HVAC and R components. Using quality materials and craftsmanship, Sporland maintains a commitment to innovation, manufacturing excellence, service, and support for its customers since 1934. The company is known for its catch-all filter dryers, thermostatic expansion valves, solenoid valves, pressure regulating valves, suction filters, electric valves, controllers, supermarket monitoring solutions, chemicals, smart service tools, ZoomLock Max Press to Connect, and ZoomLock Push to Connect refrigerant fittings. If folks want to learn more, what do they do?
You can go to Sporland.com.
I guess that's Jim and John for Sporland signing off.
This episode is sponsored by United Refrigeration and Westermeyer Industries, revolutionizing your HVACR experience. Visit URI.com for all your HVACR needs, offering real-time inventory, personalized pricing, and a nearby stock feature. Access quick pick replacement parts and branch details effortlessly. With 350-plus fully stocked locations across North America, our knowledgeable staff are ready to assist with the solutions you need. Exclusive offer. Use code ARPOD on URI.com to get a $10 gift card when purchasing the Westermeyer Oil Float, part number W4300-38F. These high-performance floats are not just compatible with their own oil separators, but also available as a crossover model. Conveniently stocked at United Refrigeration. That's code ARPOD to claim your $10 gift card. Visit URI.com now.
Gonna be hanging out with Andre and everybody. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Advanced Refrigeration Podcast. You're your host, Brett Wetzel and Kevin Compass. What's going on, boss?
Just sitting here half asleep from the not so nice night I had last night. We cut over a store and we were cutting over from CPC to Danfoss, and it was a little bit more than I thought it was going to be, especially when it was 46 circuits and there was just everywhere. And at 1 o'clock, we got everything cut over and I'm sitting there and I'm getting ready to start programming everything. And all of a sudden, all the rack boards go dead. As soon as I bring on the rest of the store, and I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding me, not again. So I'm sitting there troubleshooting it, and it's only board 13 that keeps going offline, no matter what I do. If I bring more than five boards online, board 13 goes offline. I'm sitting there, and it's 3.5-4 hours. It's 8 o'clock. We're still trying to deal with this to get the rack boards back online. Ended up having to separate board 13 from every other board and run it straight to the controller and terminate it like it was its own comm loop.
And you said there was no like inputs that steal power, right? Like it was all just sensors, right?
No, board 13 was inputs, outputs, transducers. Board 13 had almost the entire rack on it. So it had a lot of inputs and outputs, but like, it didn't matter if you unplugged them, like it still wouldn't come back online. But as soon as it had four boards online or four boards, it would be fine. And it would just communicate and not have any issues and everything would be hunky dory until it had five boards. As soon as five boards hit, it was back offline. So this morning we ended up having to rewire it. We rewired the rack to be its own separate comm loop. So the four boards in the rack were their own comm loop. And then the boards on the sales floor in the back rooms and on top of cases and on top of walk-ins and every which way they could shove a board somewhere.
Yeah.
This turned into a nightmare though, because we started cutting stuff over and stuff was wired normally open, dip switch up and CPC. So we're ripping stuff out, a lot of panels. There's just wire nuts everywhere. There's 24 volt. Everything's 24 volts in the store. There's driving rib relays at the cases that are wired normally closed. Some of them are wired normally open. Some of them had normally open solenoids. Some of them had normally closed solenoids. some of that glycol solenoids. So there's just there was just like a plethora of everywhere.
Yeah, when I used to do all the 255 programming, I had the we did a lot of Comptrol at Danfoss, and I had the little thing that was in the manual where it actually told you if this is this, then you have to make it this, and I just had it taped to the computer until I just remembered it.
Yeah. But, my big thing is I don't ever program inputs and outputs until I do the cutover. I usually, while I'm cutting everything over, as I'm like landing stuff, I always just make my own point list as I'm doing it, because I find it to be much faster and easier, especially if wires aren't long enough. I could just move them wherever I need to, and I'm not, you know, stuck trying to just move stuff over. And then that became a little daunting too, especially when I'm doing 46 circuits at once. So trying to go through and program all that and then deal with everything else, that it was not fun. It was, and then nothing was marked. There was panels that I didn't even know about on top of a walk-in.
I did.
Yeah, that had random sensors in it. I must have demoed out 250 sensor cables today. They were just dead inside panels and went to nowhere.
And that all that was RMCC, right?
Yeah, all that was RMCC, and here's the thing. So half the program was deleted out of the thing, so it must have lost its program at some point. Somebody hand-programmed it.
So that's why you didn't have the other inputs, because basically, oh, okay, I get it. So someone hand-programmed the stuff that they absolutely 100% needed. I was like, the other stuff I don't need.
We left half the inputs, so I'm sitting here trying to figure this out, and then nothing's marked inside the panels, and it...
Fun.
Yeah, it was not a good day. It was rough. And then like trying to, we actually go through everything this morning. We went through and started like commissioning everything and figuring out the rest of the issues and the cross stuff. And like I had one relay controlling four lineups that last night we found, like when one relay shut off, it shut off four other lineups. That's how it was in the RMCC.
Sweet.
So yeah, that was the plethora of my week so far.
Well, I have a question.
What's up?
You said it was very rough.
Oh god, here we go.
And it's spelled differently than roof, but yet you still say roof like rough. God,
I hate you.
I'm down in Houston again, working on the training center again and again. And so we were putting in the rest of the VRF today and some miscellaneous stuff that just has to get done before the end of the year. And that's really it. Nothing crazy. Nothing. I don't know. People have been calling me for stuff, but I don't remember what all of them are. But hey, tonight we're talking about oil level controls. We're going to talk about the mechanical, and we're going to talk about the electrical mechanical. And I don't know. Let's talk about a whole bunch of this stuff. I don't know. You want to talk about this, so let's hear where you're going to start.
All right, guys, let's go over. Let's start mechanical oil pots, and we'll build up. We're going to go, we'll start with the Sporland pots. Brett, you want to bring up the dock?
Yeah, sure, working on it.
So we'll start with the Sporland oil pots. Oil pots are a super simple thing. I always break it down like in like car language. It's like a carburetor. It has a float ball. It works off of differential pressure in a float ball. When the float ball, depending on how you set the adjustment at the top off of your differential pressure, will set your level. Now, the way this works is when the level drops, it's going to allow the needle to drop, because the ball is dropping that the needle's attached to. It's going to allow the needle to drop. And then a needle allows oil to come in. Now, the amount of oil that comes in is dependent on your differential pressure on the setting. So at the top of the oil float is a stem that you set. As you crank it in, you are lowering your oil level. Okay, as you back it all the way out, you're raising your oil level. Now, you can predict this. What it's supposed to be. If you look at the Sporland chart or the Henry chart, they all have a chart in there that lists at how many turns from top dead center that you have and what oil differential pressure you have equals what the level in the compressor is going to be. It's almost dead nuts on. You may have a little bit here and there to tweak, but generally when I'm setting oil level controls, I'll set all the rack the exact same way. Like Brent has brought up on here. So this is an OL 60. So OL 60 HX, whatever it is. So if you look on there and you have on the left-hand side, you have the oil level and the sight glass. On the bottom axis of the graph, you have the number of turns. In the middle, you have your oil differential lines. If you look on there and you go to a 20 pound differential and you look at it, if say you want a half inch glass at a 20 pound differential, you're pretty much going to be like almost half a turn from top dead center or wide open on this thing to get that half a glass. That's the way that these floats work. And then all you're doing is setting that stem in there to work off a differential. And then that's setting your level. And then as the float ball drops, it's going to allow oil to come in. And then as it stops, it's going and rises, it's going to pinch off and seal off the float. Now, these floats do have a screen in them. Not every float has an inlet screen. The Henry ones, I don't believe, do. The Sporlan ones do have an inlet screen that can clog up and get dirty.
Yep.
Don't you see those dirty that often? Usually by then it's already in the oil filter, but these are dependent on this differential pressure. So if your differential pressure is off or nothing or is too high, it's going to change your oil level in the compressors. So that's why it's incredibly important to make sure this differential pressure is sitting at the proper amount, because say if you take that same compressor with that 20 PSI differential and that half glass and you're almost wide open and it gets cranked to say 80 pounds of differential, you're going to be almost 3/4 inch in the sight glass, almost slapping the crank. So that's why it's super important to make sure that oil differential works properly, whether you have an OCV or you have a oil differential valve. Making sure that is set properly is key to making these floats work properly.
Yeah, let me move some stuff around here. Just want to make sure I get everything on here.
The other thing, guys, if you're having float issues and you're cleaning them, what I like to do is I will fill them full of degreaser. And say if I'm doing like a rack oil change or if they get clotted side glasses, I'll take them off, fill them full of degreaser. I'll turn them over, let them sit for a little bit. Let it work all the crud and crap out of there. Then I'll flush it out and, you know, rinse it out a couple times. But the other thing is when you're adjusting these, you just want to go very smoothly. Once it gets a little bit of tension on it, stop. Because there's a tiny C-clip inside. And if you put too much tension on that stem, whether it be going all the way out, it'll snap the stem off and then you can't adjust it. It'll snap the C-clip off. And then the other way, if you're going all the way in and you go in too hard, you can crush the float ball, which will make it fill up with oil and not feed. That's another thing with these floats to make sure you don't do is you don't want to go too hard or too soft in, or too hard in or too hard out. Now, when like you're doing a new store startup or like anytime, like I'm having like a lot of oil feed issues on compressors or like oil balancing issues, I'll reset all the floats at once. So I'll just take all the floats, I'll run them all the way in, and then I'll back them out to whatever the OCV should be. So after I check the OCV, say it's 20 pounds, I'll run all the floats out to where they need to be. And then I'll watch the rack and let it run for a while. If I got ones that are filling up, and I shut off the oil line and they stop filling up, I had a bad float. Especially on like startup, if it's doing it, I'm just changing out. It's a bad float. Like it's not holding its setting for where it is. It's just going to get changed out. On a running store, 100% running store, it could be coming down to suction. But if you shut off the oil line, it stops, then it's probably not. And then high pressure oil systems with a valve feeding out of it, a oil differential valve. It's usually pretty easy to see that because you'll usually have a hot line coming to it. And if you get a float that's continuously feeding, it's usually pretty warm going into there. on an OCV, you may not, a low pressure oil system, you may not see that or feel it because your pressure is reduced and you're sitting in a tank. You're not coming around out of the separator at 150 to 180 degrees. So you may not feel that float that's just constantly feeding.
Let me bring this up too real quick since you're talking about the Sporlan one of this. You can see up there it says adjustment range 5 to 90 PSI. That's basically the differential versus the suction and the oil pressure. Most oil rate or oil level regulating controls that are mechanical have a max of a 90 pound differential. So you have to watch. Some Henry ones only have a differential max of 30. So if something were to fail on the, let's just say your OCV would fail and it would just keep the pressure really high, like at rack pressure, you've just now grenaded that oil level control.
No bueno.
No good at all.
Those ones fail more, to be honest to you. Like they,
it's not every single model. There's some that do and some that don't.
So the other thing is, I know me and you've differed on this big time. Like I do not like oil equalization between the compressors. I hate it.
I guess it really depends on if you have a, I guess if you would have a accumulator that has an oil return where it's not just going, where the oil is just not coming back and going into the first compressor. Cause that's usually what ends up happening. And that oil is going to sit in there. I guess if you had, yeah. Otherwise you just got to move the compressors around. Cause what happens is not every single compressor, but there are some manufacturers who is like Voldemort. We're not going to name it, but they fill up to a certain level above what the manufacturer spec is. And essentially they don't like it. The crank ends up slapping in the oil and then tossing the oil all the way around. And then it makes its way to the piston and then crunchy to all the valves.
Or the crank goes snappy.
Once again, Voldemort. That should be the new code word. Yeah. Just everything's Voldemort from right now.
But yeah, like that's why it's super important to make sure these oil levels are 100% correct. I'm not a big fan of the oil equalization. I think it causes more problems than it solves most of the time. One compressor takes out the entire rack or locks up the entire oil system if it has blow by. But at the other hand, they do have their place at times to fix what Brett is talking about and the compressor that keeps filling up. But I'm a big proponent of why is the oil leaving the compressor so much? Usually when you see that, you have oil separator issues also, or load issues, or they got a typical centrifugal oil separator with 40% rack load.
Yeah, did you see these new things? Hold on. Oh, look at that. Westermeyer has an oil level control.
Huh.
I haven't used them yet. To be fair, I haven't probably been playing out in the field for quite a while.
The real pain in the ass is getting those bolts off.
Yeah, like what I ended up doing was, and I put a picture up on Supermarket Refrigeration Tech Talk. I have two wrenches that I've basically ground down, like to make the outside area of the wrench be able to rotate fully without getting stuck anywhere.
I heat bent one. I just took a wrench and got it like cherry red with a 40 tip, and then just heat bent it. It had a little bit more like arc to it. Worse for with the green compressors trying to get the 10 millimeters off. Like those are super tight. So those ones, like I ended up bending a 10 millimeter wrench for it to run that. You guys, oil pots are like super simple, but do be careful when you're putting them together and don't crack the sight glass on there.
Oh no.
So you gotta be real, real careful with that. Like just I usually use a nut driver. And I'll put a wrench on the backside of it and I'll use a nut driver. It doesn't take much force on there. But make sure you have the right gaskets in there. It takes a quad ring and a O-ring in there. So you get that squared off ring and then you have a circular O-ring. So I log them up and make sure they're in there right.
But yeah, you also don't need to use the Ugga Dugga on them because that's what's going to cause cracking. And you also don't need to He-Man them. They have two different O-rings that are in there. Just when you do the crisscross pattern like you're supposed to tighten everything down. And like I find a lot of people that do complain about taking them off. Yes. Getting the actual bolt in between where the channel is, where the oil goes through into the compressor is always tight. But yeah, a lot of times people just they complain because of the fact that everyone like tightens them down because maybe they might have been leaking a little bit. So instead of changing the O-ring, they just crank them down even worse.
Yeah, or they forgot the other O-ring. That's what I see the most. They either put the quad ring in there or they don't put the other one in the sight glass.
Let me show a picture of the quad ring just in case people listening don't know what we're talking about.
Today's episode is sponsored by the RefRa Shield RDP Series Differential Pressure Monitors from Westermeyer Industries, now available for transcritical CO2 systems in addition to other common pressures and refrigerants. When the filter element of your coalescing oil separator is contaminated, it can hurt your system's performance and efficiency. But how do you know when it's time to replace that filter? Wait too long to replace, and you could end up with a nasty filter blowout. But replacing too often can be a waste of time and money. The answer is installing a differential pressure monitor. The RDP series differential pressure monitors, including the new transcritical CO2 model, are available now from Westermeyer Industries. To find out more information, email sales@westermeyerin.com. That's WESTERMEYERIN.com.
Yeah, so here's your quad ring. And your O-ring. So the quad ring goes in first, and then the O-ring, and then there's your sight glass.
Yeah, super simple.
The other thing is, too, I'm looking at this now, and so this is important to know. Sometimes maybe United Refrigeration does not have exactly the same exact float. If you're in the middle of nowhere, maybe they don't have the one that you exactly need. So if you do need it going off to the side or whatever, I have a bunch of swivel T's in my truck, not nearly as much as what Kevin does. At least you can use that swivel T to get the angle of the dangle right where you need to move the oil line around and get that thing rolling.
So anytime I buy a float, I buy a swivel T. Anytime I buy a float to put in my truck, I'll grab a swivel T and I'll just throw it in a box. You know what? If you need it, then you got it. If not, it goes in the brass container in your truck and then you always got a backup one. But I'll tell you what, when you don't have it, it really sucks when you got to repipe all those oil lines.
So here's the parts kit. You can get these from Sporlin. You have the quad ring. Basically, if you order this kit, it comes with all this pretty stuff here.
The sight glass is always a pain to find.
Yeah, that's why I usually, I'll roach. Like, I had so many, parts that, I could use that. I gasket selection that I had was ridiculous. So I was like, no one's leaving. It's been in the mechanical room for 2 years. I probably have, 30 quad rings and a whole bunch of O-rings just sitting in a bag.
Yeah, the sight glasses get difficult because that's a Copeland part, but not a Copeland part. It's every time you go to a supply house, it's some random weird part number.
One of those places that like ACR where they make stuff for other people. Yeah.
Yes, 100%. That's what it is.
Is that ACR?
I don't think it's ACR, but it's a comp. It's getting rebranded as something else. Yeah. Now, guys, let's go over electronic oil floats. So we'll go into the basics. So we'll go over the OMB first. So the OMB was Copeland's original oil control. So it was the original oil level monitoring system, but electronic. So the way this thing works is it has a Halifax sensor in it. So it's essentially a level sensor. So what it's doing is it's got a sensor in there. When the oil fills up to a certain amount, it makes and then it stops. And then when the oil drops to a certain amount for a certain period, it sends a signal and it energizes a solenoid on the side of the oil control. It doesn't matter what differential it is. It's just straight oil pressure. And it just feeds oil to the compressor. Super simple. You feed it 24 volts. It does all your oil level for you. It's all predetermined. It's anywhere from 3/8 to a half usually glass, and it's taking care of everything for you. And it has a built-in alarming function and a built-in safety function. So generally when you see these is around scroll compressors, that's where I would assume they were designed for, was to run oil protection for the scrolls in rack applications. But so this needs 24 volts to run. Without 24 volts, the oil control's dead, and then the safety contacts are normally closed. When the 24 volts aren't applied, it's in safety alarm. So that way the compressor can't run without it. Now these sensors do get dirty. So if you pop off the oil control and you look at the back of it, it's got a magnet on it. If that magnet's full of metal, chances are the inside sensor piece is full of metal. So you could generally flush them out with brake cleaner or some good degreaser. So you can go through and flush that. And then the big thing is for scroll compressors, there's an extension rod in there. So there should be a screwed in. It's like a 3-inch long extension that extends it into the compressor. A lot of the Bullseye stores, when they first came out, didn't get them up here. Like the OEMs didn't put them in.
Well, hold on, Never mind. That's a different issue. Go ahead. Continue with what you're doing. Sorry.
They were having issues with oil failures and stuff not tripping on oil and not sensing properly because the extension rod needs to extend into the crankcase and keep it from sloshing around. So that extension rod is extremely important in scroll compressors. Now on a recip, you don't want to have that extension rod in there.
I've seen where that they accidentally put that in there and it doesn't, sometimes in some compressors, it'll actually smash it up.
Yes. So you don't want to run that extension rod in the recip. You only want to have that on a scroll compressor. Now, there are certain compressors, this one big time when they first came out, the K5 compressors, there was like some K5Es when they first started coming out with those. So there are certain compressors with these K5s that require a baffle plate on the OMC. There, it looks like somebody took a quarter and drilled a hole in it and the rod goes through it. And there's another hole at the bottom. What it's doing is there's so much turbulence in the crankcase of those K5 compressors, certain ones, that what was happening is it was making it constantly look like it was low on oil and it would just keep feeding. Then the compressor is pumping all that oil. So it's pumping all the oil out and then it just instantly drains the reservoir in the separator. There's a little like quarter shaped adapter. And if you look on the web or the Copeland diagram for those compressors, they list the part for it. I don't think it was a smaller run of compressors. I don't think it was a huge thing, but we ended up on this rack repiping oil lines, adding oil. It was a brand new startup and ended up having to take 11 of these K5E compressors on 3 different racks and put these adapters on. And as soon as we did it, all the oil issues went away.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with the vapor injection because you have so much velocity that you're driving in through for the subcooler because that pressure, that's a low temp compressor, right? So you're operating.
They were all medium, no vapor injection.
Really?
Yep.
Because I've only,
K5s can be low temp too. They're just the bigger scrolls.
Yeah.
But it was an earlier design. I remember having to talk to an application engineer about it. And then finally we ended up getting these. They didn't even have Copeland part numbers on them at the time. Like they were in a box given to us. It was something that they had seen in other places. And it was like a, if you need it type of part, but no, that's something to be aware of. Now,
let me share this real quick. Sorry. As we're talking about the scrolls anyway. Right here. Sometimes you need an adapter plate depending on which one you're doing.
I keep one of those in my truck because never send them.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm bringing it.
Anytime you're changing a newer scroll compressor to an older scroll, like in an Aldi or anything in a protocol, you need that adapter. Mm-hmm. So you guys need to pay attention. Like I always look at the compressors now to make sure, but like anything getting you newer, you're getting, you're going to need the adapter. I don't know why they don't put the adapter in the box because you need it every time almost.
Yeah. So this is what the adapter is. So here's the thread. Yeah. That's, like I said, I know when you do get a new compressor, if it's damaged or you can't get it off or whatever, just have one there.
Just what, the adapter, you can't use it.
Because
it's rotolock.
That's what this one, because that's the sunglasses oil lock.
Yeah, the old one is threaded.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's where you end up getting screwed. And I've had problems on the protocols fitting the new version in. It's like it's 3/4 of an inch longer. So it ends up being almost up against the front face plate. Now, they still make the OMCs. They still have their place. But then, or the OMBs, now Copeland came out, the OMCs, they're way better. They're more contained. Their line voltage and not 24 volts. The 24 volt thing is a weakness. If you lose a transformer, you lose all the oil controls. You're dead.
Why do they do that? I don't understand that. I guess because they don't want to have a transformer for every single one, but I'd rather have that than have everything fail.
I don't know. I think it was a ease of install thing. Oh, it's 24 volts. It's cable. You don't need to have power going to it. But then I'm a big proponent of not using 24 volts for things, because if you lose a transformer, you're out of the water. And if you don't have a transformer, you're screwed. So I would much rather have line voltage. The OMC is by far much better product just for that, for having the line voltage in there. The OMCs are basically the OMB's updated big brother. So you got the same setup. You got the screen on the inlet. You got two sight glasses on here instead of one, an upgraded sensor, and then you got your lights on there. You got your green light for if it's full and running. You got your red light if it's an alarm. You got your yellow light if it's filling. So super simple, much higher price rating.
Yeah. Those, so they can be used for CO2, but are they, can you use? I don't think I've ever taken apart the front cover, and I don't remember. Do those have the delays, the anti-short cycle delays on there?
So they don't have the anti-short cycle delays. It's just the wiring terminals and a place to splice your wires. So the OMCs are, you're going to see them a lot on CO2 applications. They're all over the place. You're going to see them on transcritical CO2 racks. The MOP's pretty high on them. Now, I will say this, in a pinch, I have taken an OMB and used it on the pressure rating's high enough for what you're going to be at, your working pressure for your, whatever your receiver pressure is going to be, is plenty high enough for an OMC in the middle of the night. Because we've had a couple where an OMB failed or an OMC failed, and we've had to throw an OMB on it. Because a lot of supply houses don't stock OMCs yet. What?
I don't know how I feel about that.
Why? It's the MOP's fine.
I didn't think it was. I'm looking for a document to back that up.
870 pounds, I believe, or something close to that.
Yeah, but it's not the OM. It's not the MOP. The MOP you do have to worry about, but it's also the MOPD, the differential. And that's what I'm thinking, that you might not want to do that.
That's not a high pressure CO2 regulator. What you have on the screen, OMC isn't. They have a completely different one for high pressure CO2. There's an actual CO2 version. Like the Carnot racks use. Yeah. Those are high pressure OMCs.
Gotcha.
But so that, I'm pretty sure that OMC has the same pressure rating as the. So I'm saying it'll work in a pinch. It'll get you through a weekend. It'll get you to where you could order a new one. Like, don't leave it on there, but it's better than throwing away all the food in the dumpster.
Anything's better than that. But yeah, I want to look up that MOPD.
All I know is it works, and it works fairly well. You could usually get an OMC. Or I'm sorry, an OMB. Confusing them both. You can usually get an OMB at a supply house. Most of the time, the OMCs you got to order. Now, Bitzer has a different one. They use these Crewon ones.
I hope you're biting your tongue. I hope you're biting your tongue right now.
They're like an OMC, but different. Yeah, you have to program them. And there's all kinds of ridiculous programming to do. So it becomes very difficult. It's not just you open the box of an OMC or an OMB, slap it on the thing, and it just works without any adjustment. It just works in whatever environment it's in. Those ones, you have to sit there on your phone with a special adapter, and you have to tune it.
Wait, what adapter?
There's an adapter that goes into it.
Come on.
Yeah, there's an adapter for the iPhone. The iPhone one is like a Bluetooth dongle, and then the Android one actually plugs into it. You have to unscrew this thing in the back of the oil control, put this adapter in, and it's like a proprietary adapter. You ain't getting it anywhere. You got to order it from them.
It's called a monopoly.
All that to program an oil control.
So I have to ask, because I'm trying to look up this MOPD right now. What things you have to program it? Tell me, because I don't know.
These pulse rates, these oil pulse rates, these oil times, the reset times, this stupid alarm called soil limit that basically for some reason says the eye is dirty and it just like locks the compressor out 900,000 times for no reason.
Soil limit.
Yeah, until you slap an OMC on there and it just goes away.
Sounds like something like an old folks home soil limit.
Yeah, it literally says or soil alarm. It soiled itself.
That's horrible.
I mean, you're just sitting here trying to prove me wrong. It's hilarious.
What do you mean? I'm not proving you wrong. I'm not proving you wrong at all. I just what's that?
Just ask the AI. But yeah, I'm a big fan of the OMCs. The high pressure ones, they're coming around more and more. I like them. I'm not a big fan of how like these rack manufacturers are using the hoses on them though. Like I'm just waiting for one of those hoses to blow off at 1400 PSI all over the place.
Oh, that must be fun. What hoses are you talking about?
Like the high pressure hoses, like Carnot has, like they're reflex hoses, but like they're like high pressure versions.
Okay.
We had one blow off already and it was subcritical and it made a huge mess. There was oil dripping from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. What?
So it was a poop show. It was bad.
It was bad, but.
Do you have any documentation on that? The K1 one, the Cure one?
Now the look. Well, every time I see one, I just change it out to an OMC. Like I have the cable, but I refuse to sit there and try to tune the thing because it's an oil control.
But that's what I don't understand. Why give all these options, especially if they're not right? Because every manufacturer is going to want their own deal.
Oh yeah, then like everybody try to tune these, and everybody's like, try this setting, then try this setting, try this setting. And it's, none of them work that great. Then you throw an OMC in there or an OMB and it's just bump, works. No more problems.
That's silly. That's absolutely silly. I found the thing that I was looking for. So if you go ahead.
I'm being very nice about it. Just very, very critical of something very simple.
Like everyone else makes it. It's simplistic. I'm sorry. I used the wrong word. I should have said simplistic.
Simple is better. The more simple, the better.
Well, that's what Dave Sizemore said. He's like, try to keep it simple, right?
Did you find the MOP?
I did. I'm bringing it up right now.
What is it? 700 pounds? 600 pounds?
You'll see it when it's up.
Oh, God.
There we go. So,
yeah, whatever.
So, the MOP is 875, but the differential is 350 for the differential.
It's still plenty.
Not if your oil pressure is at your pressure for your rack, right? And you're at suction pressure.
What are you talking about? If you're using a high pressure, there's only one manufacturer using a high pressure oil system, and that's Carnot.
Okay, so let's just say it's all right. So let's just like flash tank pressure is what we're talking.
If you're talking about flash change pressure to suction pressure, usually 100 pounds, if even that. Usually it's about 400 to 415 to 500 to 515. So It is completely fine. Just wanted to prove me wrong.
I didn't want to prove you wrong. I just don't want you giving out information that someone's gonna get boomed.
They're right there. The OMB JB1.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you weren't talking about the regular OMB. You were talking about the regular OMB.
It'll work.
All right. That I couldn't find yet. Till next time. I'll look it up. I'll look it up. This is bothering me now. Irritating.
It's bothering.
Yeah. What other oil controls are there? Damn it, I gotta turn that off. I'm trying to think of the other oil controls.
Henry ones, like those Henry electronic ones. I've seen like the remnants of them. Like I've never seen. I think it was a very short-lived product.
Oh, the Henry digital ones, the ones with the three little lights and the solenoid that looks like it's on the side or something.
Yeah, I don't think those are around very much.
What rack manufacturers are putting the Curawan ones on?
So Bitzer was shipping them with compressors, is what it was. Mm-hmm. And then the Hill was doing some, then Zero Zone was doing some. So I know they're cheaper. What?
Just the fact the way you say it, they're cheaper.
They are cheaper.
They look like a space shuttle.
Why do they do look like a space shuttle, and they have all these options that nobody needs. That guys just need to slap it in, and it just needs to work.
Although you don't need a...
Like the ShamWow guy, set it and forget it. Or the ShamWow.
But it hooks up to every compressor, and you don't even need anything. Look, there's like 40 holes in the thing. See? Oh,
yeah. That is also super frustrating because you got to put the bolts in at the front and you got to take the whole damn thing apart in order to get the bolts in. And then
this little thing,
what
you see that?
Yeah.
The little like thing that could block up with copious amounts of junk in there.
Oh yeah. And it doesn't come out either.
What?
No, it's like a it looks like a stone sponge. You ever see one of the Hill racks where they have the inline oil strainer with that thimble in there?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like full of that.
Oh, that looks like something.
See, there's the M12 socket. You see the cable right there? The diagnose interface?
Yeah, right there.
That's where it goes in.
That is ridiculous. Why?
I don't know. I will say this, though. You could slap those things on and off the compressors and like just pull in a vacuum. Like when I change oil controls, I never drain the oil out of the compressors. I always just throw a vacuum pump on the suction and let it suck on the compressor. And then I take the bolts out of the oil control and just rip it off real quick and then slap a new one on without making a mess.
But look, it comes in different voltages, Kev.
Yeah, it does. It comes in BAR.
Oh, really?
I don't know. It's all bar rating because it's all European. Because they can't talk normal.
All right, there. Draw the line. Draw the line there.
Stop it.
Talk. You can't talk normal.
It's pressure. What
would Wayne say?
I don't know.
He would yell at you.
He lives in Texas now, so he's got to learn PSI.
Actually, I'm going to see him tomorrow.
Oh, it must be nice.
The fact that I live in Texas, you don't like it. You don't like Texas.
I like Texas just right now.
When it's 50 degrees.
Yeah, right now it's nice and comfortable. Like in July, it's terrible.
Oh, wow. So you can change all these times, the firing time and such.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's too much. It's way too much.
There's a 24-page document on this freaking oil level control.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
And 100% isn't technically 100%.
It's just too much. It's a ridiculous amount of stuff for the average person to do. And there's all these charts and graphs. And
I see this. Like I do. I want one just to see all the stuff.
That's you want one? I think I got like four of them at the house.
Yeah, send me one. You have the 24-volt version, the 115. If you have the 115-volt, because then I could just put it into a plug in the house. That would be awesome.
I think it's a dual volt.
Is it really?
Yeah, I don't know. It's been bouncing around my van for a while.
Yeah, that's right. I'll still take it. As long as wait, are these Wi-Fi or do I need the dongle?
You need the dongle.
Oh, I got to order a dongle now.
You got to order a dongle.
I don't need any more dongles. I actually just went through the other day and got my controls bag. And it's literally one of those Milwaukee pack-out bags that's yay tall and yay wide. I even have my telephone in there yet. I got to take that out. I don't think I need the telephone anymore.
Telephone?
You never hooked up to a modem line to see if there was noise in the line to see if you had a communication, why that's why you had the communication failure, why the alarms aren't going out?
What?
Yeah, when I did a whole bunch of comtrol, sometimes the alarms wouldn't go through.
Dial up?
Yeah. And you would plug in your phone to the line that goes out, and I would call myself on my cell phone using a terminal phone just to see if there was any noise on the line.
Can you even buy a phone like a terminal phone anymore? Like,
I don't know.
If you went to Walmart, I don't know that they would have a house phone.
I'm gonna look it up on Amazon.
I'm sure Amazon has one, like three of them for the entire country. It's one of those super old guys that still have the house phone.
My Grammy was still alive. She'd have one too.
I bet you have a house phone.
I don't. I mean, I think we have a phone number, but I don't think we have any phones plugged in.
Oh, all right, guys. I think it's going to do it for Oil Controls.
Have a nice day. See you guys.